Okay. Schöne Bürger dann. So, die hören die, die schon mal übt. Hören wir denn? Die schon gehört. Die schon nicht gehört. Hören, hören. Was will ich? Snacken mit diesem Mike Harmen. Da nur so ein Kaschepfett, die Leute mit diesem Mike Harmen. Skalja Brücke da? Kan du höra mig?
Ja,
okej. Okay. Jag tror kanske nu det funkar.
Kan du höra mig? Ja.
Okay. Bättre. Ja, okej. Okay. English, yes. I think now it's working a bit better. Anyway, I see question marks there. You have the button in the in here. You can add questions here if you want. Okay.
Add questions here if you want. Okay.
Give me my voice. Just a sec. So once again, if there are any questions, just click the button on the right here, and then you can write something there, questions, comments. Okay, let's start. We're getting a bit late. I had a feeling that we would have people attending online today, so this is for those who are attending online, mostly. We have more than 10 people online at least, and some more here. Okay. Thank you. So, because we last time we talked was like a few weeks ago, so I would like to just briefly summarize something about the. This part of the course, which is like cybersecurity part. And we're talking about the main concept here, the main term is cybersecurity, and it's usually mentioned as part as a composition of two words, cyber and security. Cyber coming from ancient or maybe recent Greek, which means someone who governs, someone who leads or manages, and then security, we can talk about that again. According to local reports from the authorities, cybersecurity is defined as something which includes measures to protect against real and potential threats that might be channeled or distributed, let's say, through ICT infrastructure. And then further on, cybersecurity, which is part of this course, part of the lecture today, is considered as a subcategory of ICT security, which perhaps this is because cybersecurity is mostly, at least in Norway, here it's mostly related to society. So how can we protect society against the different threats? Yes, and then I also had another thing to mention here, that we are using a book, which is called Digital Sikkerhet and Innføring, Digital Security and an Introduction. And this is available in Academica here in Gjøvik, or you can also find it online. This is a main book. It's in Norwegian. But yeah, this is a bachelor program, so that's the most relevant book that is related to this course, to the different topics, and to the learning outcome that we expect all of the students to reach in the end. Apart from the book, we have also additional resources, and some of them I will also be using them today. But you don't need to, like, purchase them or locate them. It's okay with the information that you will get from the lecture. So the other books are Principles of Information Security. There's another book in Norwegian called Data Sikkerhet for Ledere. There's also something from 2011, which is Information Security Economics. And also, we might use it, or it might be part of additional lectures in the following weeks, Management Information Systems. Now, let's start with the lecture for today. First of all, we'll start with some basic concepts around information, computer, and cybersecurity. So before we do that, I would like to ask all of you who can join Menti to provide some information about what you have heard recently, what has happened recently that might be relevant to mention here. And this is something that you can type. Okay. Can happen. Okay. let's take this first. Tears of the Kingdom. Yes. Good. So, as you can see, there is a lot going on, right? That we can all agree about. Now, there's a question here for those of you who are not able to read or follow in Norwegian. That list had also some additional sources in English, which you could follow. But once this lecture is over, we can discuss with those of you who are still willing to read some more books in English, and then we can see if you are happy with those books or not. Okay? Now, the reason I asked you this question was because actually there's always something going on, right? And from what I could hear around in the recent news, one of those was, you know, we just lost Queen Elizabeth, right? Now, the thing with this event is that, okay, it's something that could happen. It could have happened before, it could have happened sometimes. But then, how can the malicious actors use this on their advantage? And they can. And there has been sort of an awareness from different authorities, especially in the UK, that were concerned about the potential phishing attacks which could be related to this event. Because if you heard the news, I guess you might have heard that there would be different events related to that. Like it would be like maybe a week long or something more. And then all of these events would happen in London or somewhere else, and there would be lots of people attending. So in this case, it could be that some people could receive an email saying, here it is, you have a discount if you want to use this train or this trip or this way of transport towards attending the events or something else. And all of this could be really the case of a phishing attack, because there wouldn't be any offer, any ticket on the other side. It would just be used to get the personal information from the people that would relate to this event. So that's something which could be very easy in a sense at the first glance, but then it could turn to malicious scam otherwise. So yeah. And then of course you also mentioned other cases. So and most of these cases are all related to the fact that we are all more or less making use of digital devices, and somehow most of the digital devices are exposed or will be exposed sometimes in the future to the criminals out there. And then the book shows an example which is very local, but it's also very usual. There's this period where all Norwegians get, most Norwegians get the tax return and tax settlement documents, and then they might get emails, messages that could be authentic, but they're not. So this could be a way how to try and lure the potential user into giving out his personal information. And then another very recent case, was that one of the local banks started sending messages in order to make its customers aware that there could be messages sent out which would likely use their credentials, but it wasn't the case. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. I see more questions here. Okay. What is a phishing attack? Let's answer this one. A phishing attack is a way how you can lure the user of an email account, the owner of a mobile number, by sending him a message that asks from him his personal information. In a way that's not like very suspicious to him, but if we are dealing with somewhat experienced users, they would be able to distinguish between what could be suspicious and what could be the real message. So phishing is like from phishing, where you try to fish the information from the user in a way that may be tricky and also could be very severe for the user himself. We will be talking more about phishing and everything in this part of the course. I think I answered this. And then, yeah, okay. Yeah, so when we talk about these cases, it's always like the criminals are able to exploit both the human vulnerability, which is like something that the user is fond of. For example, in the case that I mentioned, if the user, if that person was going to attend the events in the UK, then he would be very much open to any kind of offer to go there. And then it could be that he was so like committed into doing that he could leave all this information open for the criminal to use. And then there are also technological vulnerabilities, and we'll get back to this in more details in the next lecture on cybersecurity coming week 42. This is when, let's say, there are vulnerabilities coming from the system side or coming from the location itself. And these are more likely related to computer, let's say, or system or software vulnerabilities. Digital security in itself isn't only about trying to understand what are the different threats around us, but also about trying to understand how we can protect against the threats and the vulnerabilities. And we can go back to that again a bit later. And that's where a definition from the book is also provided, where we mention digital security as about protecting everything that is vulnerable, because it is connected or otherwise depending on information and communication technology. And this is from the Justice Ministry, 2019. In that case, we are using this concept in a similar way with computer security or ICT security. Then, information security. This is a bit more general in scope. So it is about information not being available or known to unauthorized persons, about the information not changed unintentionally or by unauthorized persons, or about the information being available only to authorized persons when needed. These three parts of the definition, we will get back to these very soon in this lecture, because they are some of the most important concepts in information security, cybersecurity, security in general when it comes to computers, ICT, and public. And in this case, we are talking both about information in and outside ICT systems. So we can say that the digital security is part of the information security. And then before, we also compared between cybersecurity and ICT security. So there are different definitions which look to be very similar together, but there are some differences between them. So security is also defined in the book chapter, first chapter, and then I also wanted to talk a bit about this as well. So we have information security, cyber security, computer security, ICT security. In all of them, this is the word that is the common one, and we can say that security is defined as the condition where we have no fear, no danger, or no undesirable events at all. And this is taken from NORSC standard 2012. This is also about the measures that we should have in order to reach that condition. Now, are we able to reach that condition? Are we able to live or to reach that state where we have no fear, there's no danger, there are no undesirable events at all? I guess not. So, in a sense, this is also a desirable stage, which is something that everyone is trying to get to that. When we talk about security, we should also talk a bit about risk, which is what could happen, in a sense, if something goes wrong, and how to deal with that. And when we talk about risk, we can also talk about risk, like, for example, for anything that could happen around us, like in the book and in the slides, there was the example of a climber trying to reach the goal of getting to the highest peak, and then having some events going on around him that would not allow him to do that. But we also have information security risks, which is like what could go wrong and how would this affect the security overall within the organization, for example. So the risk part and also information security, you have already noticed that I mentioned a few times the concepts such as threats and vulnerabilities. And this is always very important, very much close to what we are talking when we mention cybersecurity, information security, etc. So first of all, we also have assets, which we should talk about. And assets in Norwegian Verdi, it's mostly, for example, for an organization, it's the ICT systems, and for the climber, it's his life, his health, his most important assets. And then, of course, threats. We talk about those people, those malicious actors that are trying to break into the data. And on the other side, when we talk about threats to the climbing case, we have people who maybe are trying to sabotage him, or maybe, let's say, bad weather, bad conditions, and so on. Also, vulnerabilities. It's all about something that's not secure enough when it comes to the systems, which is like security holes, security gaps, something designed or programmed in a bad way. And then for the climber could be the lack of safety measures on his side. So for example, he hasn't taken everything he needs to climb that, or it's not safe as expected. Another question. At what point are incidents, fear and danger at an acceptable level? Now, this is not an easy question to answer, but for example, if we talk about risk, there is also a level of acceptable risk, for, which we can measure as the amount of risk that, for example, the organization can handle. Or in the case of individuals, the individuals can handle. One of my colleagues is always bringing this case of having a bicycle. And if you have a bicycle, would you rather buy a lock for the bicycle? Or would you just use it like that, without a lock? Now, in this case, if you if the bicycle is really relevant for you, like if you need it to go to work, to go to school, to go to the shops, etc., etc., you might also think about buying a lock, okay? And then on the other side, you might also do without it. And that's where you like trying to understand if you could accept the risk of not using a lock, or if you should just buy it and then just use it as many times as you want. And on the organization side, this is also very relevant because, of course, they cannot secure everything they need. So they have to make choices at a certain time. And that's where, like, fear, danger, potential incidents could be, like, more probable to happen or not. So, yeah. I guess I answered this. Now, because this is the first lecture about information security or cybersecurity, I thought that it would be interesting to start a bit with a larger context, like, okay, now we are talking about cybersecurity, we have a lot going on recently, a lot of attacks, but then how did this whole happen? Well, there's some history, not much history, but it's still very relevant, I guess, to discuss about it today. So first of all, when we talk about the history of cybersecurity, it's always related to information security, which was there before, in a sense. The term was already there. And then information security is also very much close to the need for computer security. So computer security, in its basic form, it's all about trying to keep secure the physical locations and also the hardware and the software that could be used in a certain time from an organization. This was very much important, especially during World War II. And this was very important because there were different information coming in and out, and there should be a way to make sure that this information will not be used from someone else. But in the time, the only measures that could be taken would be like, we should secure the location, we have, like, you know, keys, We should understand who's going in and out. We should make sure that the people, we know them, who's going in and who's going out. And that was like a primitive version of facial recognition we have today. And then we could also somehow have an early way of getting access into the system, which was only related to those people and not everyone else. Now, during World War II, we also had Enigma. I'm not sure if you saw the movie or you know more about it. This was also very relevant to the history of information security because it was one of those milestones where it was finally possible to crack a machine, and then also the machine that would be used to crack it should be secure on its own, because it could be that it could be attacked on the other way around. And then, of course, another important moment of the history of information security is when the research unit in the military, in the U.S. military, decided to go a step further and design and build a system that would be able to transmit information without the need of sending packages towards the other center, like sending them by mail or so. And that's where the whole history about ARPANET started, which is like the network designed for this purpose. And it was also the predecessor of what we call today the internet. This was back in the 60s, middle 60s. And once this ARPANET was being used and used for more and more institutions and researchers, there were more nodes inside the network. It was getting more and more popular. Then now, suddenly, the time came when this network should be even more secure. So it was not more about the people that were researchers, but it could be that because it was like, how to say, by default, going to be used by researchers and institutions, they should be, let's say, safe in a way. So it shouldn't be something which would be disturbing. But then on the other side, I was just checking time, but we can go a bit once this slide is over, maybe. On the other side, there were cases of, let's say, breach of information security and so. So there was a need for this step, which was a task force created for the purpose of maintaining security within the ARPANET. And one of the papers who was related to it was the so-called RAND report, R609. And the report in itself is also considered today as the first paper introducing the concepts, the general or the wide concept of computer security. So in this case, this report, late 60s, was the first one to acknowledge that we shouldn't just physically secure the locations with a key, but we should do something more. We should, first of all, limit the access to unauthorized users. We should also try and improve the security of the data that is being transferred, not just secure the system, secure the hardware, and so. And also, the third one was also that we should include different layers within the organization in the process. So the security part is not only something that's related to the IT in a sense, but also about the different levels of management. And this was 50 or 60 years ago, which was a very good evolution in the time. And then later on in the 90s, we had the internet, which was a logical evolution of the ARPANET. Now all the computers were mostly on usual people's hands, so we needed to have more security, or maybe more options there, because the security will come afterwards. The internet is the international network of networks. It has millions and millions of units connected together. And then all of these units had the opportunity to connect to another unit and so, but then the security was lacking somehow. And it seems that even though the people were, and the industry and the whole development was asking for this process, the security was lagging behind. So I guess also what we have today is something that could be better if it was better planned the first time. And in recent years, we are all talking about how we could exploit those vulnerabilities, those security holes, those issues that are running always with different systems, different software, also human error, and so on and so. And we are also talking a lot about cyber war. And that was also something that you were mentioning in that recent use part. So this is something about a brief history of information security, starting from World War II and up to our days. Yes, and then I guess we can take a break now and start again in 10 minutes. Yes.
talked about a bit of history before, and now more recent history would help us somehow understand why we are talking today about cybersecurity and why the Turk is called cybersecurity and the network. This is mostly because up to 13 years ago or so, the most usual terms in the
Okay. This is nice. Until 13 years ago or so, the most usual terms were computer security, information security, ICT security. What happened afterwards was that cybersecurity as a term started being a buzzword. And when did it happen? Exactly. Once President Obama in the United States had a speech, and it was also part of the speech was also about that, about how we should use cybersecurity to defend ourselves and the systems and the organizations and so on. And there is a link, but I can also forward to you after this lecture. And if you could see from the chart, you can see that there's a certain peak right after this speech, because that's when people got a bit more aware that, okay, there's this buzzword, there's this new word, which is also relevant to the field, and that's cybersecurity. And it was so important that there were papers and research done after it, and that's what also I've used for that. So it's not just the term, but it's also where and how it is being used. So we have different definitions based on where it is being used. For example, the industry has its own perspective, its own definition. And then the government and, of course, the academic institutions. And the paper in 2017 found that based on some criteria, the best definition who would make the term more understandable to everyone would be the one offered from the cybersecurity policy of South Africa, which is, of course, a government agency doing that. And then it's a collection of tools, policies, and security concepts, safeguards, etc., in order to protect the cyber environment and organization and assets. And then they went further, we will see after this slide, and they created even a more detailed definition. In this slide, we have the background behind the definition offered from Cisco Academy online. This is cybersecurity is defined as the ongoing effort to protect the network systems and all of the data from unauthorized use or harm. I see more questions there, but I will try to work with them later on, in the end. And this is the definition which was the most comprehensive one when it comes to defining cybersecurity. So it is also including terms such as confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And then, of course, risk management, of course, the guidelines and policies that we talked before. Now, why these terms, confidentiality, integrity, and availability, are important? Because there is the so-called CIA triad. And I guess CIA, for most of you, should be already known. And there could be different answers to that. So this is somehow the industry standard for information security. I'm mentioning information security now because we are talking about 50 or 60 years ago. And then the standard is based on those characteristics that are able to describe the utility of information. These are the main characteristics, but if we dig deeper, there could be even more, but these are perhaps the most important when it comes to information security as well. And these are exactly confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Confidentiality. This means that the information is not made known to unauthorized persons. And this is the definition from the book. And of course, there are even more definitions out there. We can say that the information has confidentiality when it is protected from disclosure or exposure to unauthorized individuals or systems. This ensures that only those users that have the rights, the privilege, and need to access that information can do so. This is what confidentiality is about. Further on, there are different measures that individuals and organizations can undertake in order to make sure that they are maintaining a certain level of confidentiality. First of all, we could use information classification, which is not always the case, but it could help. Like, for example, if this information is strictly confidential, if this information is public, if this information has some other level of classification. And then it's always useful to make sure we have a safe and secure document storage. That's not easy to be accessed, and only the users that need to access it can do that. We can also help apply general security policies like passwords, access control, and so on. And then make sure that all the end users or information custodians, the ones that are responsible for that, are fully aware of what's going on and how they should, in a sense, do their best. When we talk about confidentiality, this is also very much related to privacy, which is another term which is about trying to have the data and information which is relevant and highly sensitive, private, not accessible to anyone else. And so we can say that a high level of confidentiality is required if we are looking for protecting our personal information, or in other words, PII, personally identifiable information. And here I would like to ask you very quickly to provide your answers. Let's say 30 seconds. What could personal information be? That kind of information which we wouldn't want the others to know about. Yes, I see social security number, passwords, home address, person number, birthday. Yeah. Also, in Norway, part of this is already public, right? So this is okay. And then, political meanings, okay. Health history, yes, sure. Yes. Yes, okay. Integrity. again, according to the book, but which is also like somehow the universal definition of it, the information is or has integrity when it is not changed unintentionally or by unauthorized persons. That's also from Datatilsynet, which is the Data Protection Directorate in Norway. So the information is said to have integrity when it is whole, complete, and uncorrupted, which means there are no viruses associated to that, or it is not affected from this different malicious software. As an example, there was an event in 2010. There was an uranium enrichment plant in Iran who was affected. It's also noted that it was affected through a computer worm, which was transferred through a memory stick at the time. And then it was spread to the other computers that controlled the turbines of the plant. Now, the consequences of this attack, even in recent days, are still difficult to assess. So what happened and why? And it seems that the attack was highly advanced, and the way how it reached the target was by, of course, violating the integrity. And I would very briefly ask you to give me the answer. What was the event? Sorry. Here. Okay. I think we are starting the quiz here then. Let's wait. Can we get to 40? Thank you. I have 1 minute here, but I guess, So what's the event we're talking about? How it is called? Correct answer is Stuxnet. Thanks to everyone who participated. The sound is very low. Is it still the case? I'm just checking the questions. It's okay now. Okay. That was nice. That was very, very nice. Good. Availability. This is the next CIA triad component, or you may find it anywhere as security principle in the book Sikkerhetsmål. This is how it's defined in Norwegian. And then availability. This makes sure that the information is available to authorized persons when needed. This is again from Datatilsynet. It enables the authorized users to access information without interference or obstruction from other users or malicious actors, etc., and receive it also in the required and expected form. Another example here, 2017. This is more recent. the most one of the most affected organizations was a Danish shipping company. I'm not giving you the name. There were files encrypted with a given ransomware virus, which was, I think, in 2017, it was one of those years where ransomware viruses boomed, in a sense. And then, in this case, they entered through a third-party supplier, which was a software provider to the Danish company. Not a Danish company, anyway, this one, the provider. And then the estimated loss was about $300 million. So let's see now. What should be the answers to this? I think we can start. So what is the event I'm talking about, or what is the attack related to that? Yeah, now we have 30 seconds, so please hurry up. Okay, the name of the Danish company is Maersk, and there were some other answers. The answer is not Petya. Goofy, okay, that could be that, yeah. Thanks. good. Now, more examples. Availability is always breached when we have these so-called denial of service, distributed denial of service attacks. What happens in a DDoS, distributed denial of service attack? There are thousands of computers sending traffic to the victims, to the target's ICT system, in order to overload their service. There are thousands and thousands of such examples, okay? There were also local examples in Norway, and one of the most recent ones that was, or maybe, yeah, okay, so the recent one, the most recent one maybe attack could be the one that you mentioned about Östra Toten, okay. But then there was also something happening in 2019. At that time was also the first time I was teaching this course. So it was very recent that we were talking about cybersecurity, and then a few months earlier this happened. So in this case, I'm not giving you another 30 seconds. We're talking here about Norsk Hydro. And then, of course, both ransomware viruses and DDoS are breaches of availability. And companies do not have access to their files in both cases. Now, another important term. We talked about the CIA triad, we talked about the security principles, but there's another approach that could be useful when trying to understand what happened and then how could we, or how can we still solve the problem. It's called the McCumber's Cube, based on the work done from John McCumber, who was the first one to come up with this approach. It's very much similar to a Rubik's Cube. Okay, so it has this 3 times 3 times 3 cells, and it has 3 dimensions, which are related to a certain event, and which could also be used to try and solve whatever could be solved after that. So we have the CIA triad, one of the dimensions, yes. We have the technological measures. And then we have, of course, the different stages of data. So we have the CIA triad, as in confidentiality, integrity, availability. We have states of information, such as data could be in storage, could be the information or data processing, or it could be transferring. And then we also have the different safeguards and countermeasures. One of them is technology, and then we have education, training, and policy. All of these areas, the 27 combinations, should be addressed in order to ensure that we have overall comprehensive security. As an example, let's say there was an issue where we need to establish a set of controls or safeguards, which in this case is technology, in order to make sure that we are protecting information integrity, one cell from the CIA triad, while the data is in storage, the states of information is storage. And then also the solution should be something related to that. So we could have a system for detecting host intrusion in order to alert all the security administrators that the file has been modified. So this is how we can make use of the McCombers cube in order to solve something which has happened. Good. I think we're much better in time right now. The next topic, which is also part of the first chapter in the book, is about cryptography, which is, surprisingly enough, almost the same wording also in Norwegian. And before trying to define it, I was thinking to ask you to provide some words that could be defining cryptography. So if it's possible, I can start the clock and let's see what we have. Okay, so we have encryption, okay, encrypting, hiding messages, that's very good, ciphertext, cipher, secret message, HTTPS, RSA, yes, password encryption, and so on. Good, Julius Caesar, that's also very nice. Thank you. So, what does the book say about cryptography? Cryptography is designed around the different techniques used for protecting information from disclosure or dissemination. And then we have the image here on the left, which somehow shows the whole process. So, we have initial text, which is about to be sent out to the receiver on the other side. And this is usually called plain text. And then this text should be encrypted in a way that the receiver on the other side is able to reverse the action and see the original message. This is done through a certain key, which is called encryption key, which is a formula, a method that is used in order to make this message not readable in a way. Okay? And then once this message is not readable, he turns into what we call a ciphertext, which was also part of the answers there. And that's very good. And then before it reaches the receiver, the other end, he should be decrypted from the same key, from the same formula, the same method that was used to encrypt it, which the receiver should have. And then it's decrypted, and it's hopefully back into the same form, the same text that was before it was encrypted. Yes. Examples. You see an image on the right, which is about the movie Enigma, and which is one of the most typical examples when we talk about encryption or cryptography, because everything about that machine was about sending encrypted messages to the receivers that should also try and understand these messages based on some prearranged method. This is one of the most typical examples from the 20th century. But what maybe some of you don't know is that encryption or cryptography was already there since the ancient times. Ancient times. Yeah. So in this case, this was also called the Caesar technique because of Julius Caesar. I'm not sure how to spell it, to pronounce it. He was the Roman general and emperor, and then he designed a way to make sure that his messages would go to the other generals without being intercepted. It was very relevant and very crucial, and it was also one way how they would win the wars. In this case, for the Caesar technique, the way how he chose to encrypt the messages was just by mixing the letters. So it's like, for example, instead of A, he used E, and then instead of B, he used, for example, F or so, right? So there was a certain step between the different letters used in order to make them hide from someone who could catch that message. Enigma worked somehow in a similar way, but of course with a more advanced method. So, from the beginning, we talked about encryption keys. And in this case, Enigma, in its 20th century World War II level of development, used this many keys, potential keys. So if someone would try to break Enigma, he should understand at least one of the different combinations here. And then the recent techniques that we use today, for example, Advanced Encryption Standard 128, is called like that because he uses up to 2 powered by 128, which is a lot more. And then, of course, when we talk about keys and encryption, we have two main ways of doing that, either symmetrical or asymmetrical encryption. So symmetrical encryption. In this case, somehow like the example we used in the beginning here, we have the sender and receiver sharing the same key. So the sender has one key or one method to encrypt the message, and the receiver should use the same method, the same key, to decrypt it. And there are many examples. Enigma at the time was a good example of a symmetrical key, because at the time there wasn't any need for a more advanced method. And then, of course, there are even today other methods used, such as DES, Data Encryption Standard, or AES, Advanced Encryption Standard. Now, is this a good solution? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. The main challenge is that if we have the same key, of course, someone should know sometimes about that. And then it's very difficult to keep that key, that method, that formula safe. I see questions here, but we can take them later. What about asymmetrical encryption? Then we have the so-called public and private keys. We had a part which is public key encryption, and then that shows that each of the users in this communication system, let's say, have the same key, can use the same public key for accessing something. But then, at a certain moment, they also should have their own private key for making sure that their own information, data, transferred, received, is only accessed by them, in a sense, by that organization, by that unit, by that node. So in this case, we have a higher level of security, because each unit in this communication has its own private key. And then we have a few more examples, like such as RSA. I'm not able to remember the full name. And then DH, which stands for Diffie-Hellman, or ECC, elliptic curve cryptography. In this case, the main challenge is, since the public key is public, we should make sure to keep safe the private key. There are also other encryption techniques, such as the hash function, which is a way to make sure that the file is not being changed without permission. And there's also files, and there's also lines of different characters and called hash source code and so. And then there will be maybe a lab. You will have time during the labs on Friday to work on it. I will make it available very soon. And then, of course, the MAC function, message authentication code, which in this case is similar to the hash function, but it also provides an additional key. So it's like, again, an additional layer of security. This is something which is provided in the first chapter in the book, but then we can still talk about it also when we talk about authentication, access control later, which is also part of the chapter 4 in the book. Good. It seems we have good time to go further. Yes. So this was somehow the lecture for today. I would use this slide in this course because you do have group exercises and group assignment. And even though I haven't been teaching you since August, in a sense, I do get continuous updates. I am the course responsible, so In any case, you could contact me for anything. And then in this case, I would like to push you to talk more and get in contact more with your groups, especially the ones that are listening online. So I know that there are a few challenges around several groups, so please, as long as there is at least someone else or two or three more which are part of your group, please try to keep contact with them and try to start working together. Of course, there's not much to work right now, but there will be very soon. I will talk about that in the next slide. Yes, before that, please feel free to provide at least three new concepts that you got from the lecture today. I think you can all access it, yep. And I can, put a timer here. Thank you. Yes, so I think you can all see the cloud here, and that's good. Okay. So, concluding remarks. First of all, the reference group is established, in a way. It wasn't possible for us to get to have the meeting with the reference group 2 weeks ago. But still, we were able to get some feedback from them, and that was very useful. One of those was also related to the way how we are doing the lectures, and I think at least me, in a sense, I will follow with using Menti for the rest of the cybersecurity lectures. And I have been doing that since 2019, so that's not a huge challenge for me. Or 2020, at least during the corona period. Also about the reference group. We have time, actually, but I would just like to know beforehand, do we have students from economy here? Economics? Yes, we have a winner. would you like to be part of the reference group? Thank you. Then I think Anna Grete will also be very happy about this. Yeah, okay. Can you just, when the lecture is over, we can talk, okay? Yeah, of course. That was very good because at least you like saved 2 or 3 minutes from all this. So, thank you. Yes. Now, I talked about the groups, right? The next thing to do, the first assignment as a group, you will be send out a document called work contract. It will be delivered in Teams. All the groups should read it. If anything, it's a Word document, so you can still edit it if you need to as a group. But please don't edit the main document, okay? And then the important part is that all of the groups should agree on it, in a sense, and sign it, okay? So that work contract will be your contract between you and also your contract, in a sense, with the work that's going to be carried out for the course. So that's important for you, your group, and us and the course in general, okay? This is not available yet. I will make it available very soon. And I expect all the groups to go through it and sign it as quickly as possible, hopefully not longer, no later than next week, okay? I will make sure to send more details in Teams. Yes. And then, of course, as part of the usual design of the course, there will be a few review sessions coming. You had already something with Kelly, the Kahoot session. We will have something similar, but we will start from Mentimeter, or at least I plan to do that. So we will have an individual session where everyone can answer the questions, and then we will have a Kahoot session where the answers will be, where the questions will be answered as a group. Okay? We will discuss about this again. I think the first review could come up in week 42. And this is a question for the economic students, so that's fine. Let's see who won this. Let's see. It's a tie. Do we have No here? Do we have Vegard or Ronald here? Ah, do we have No? Okay. Thank you, No. Keep working like that. Very good. And yeah, keep being invisible in a sense. Okay, questions. Is chapter 1 recommended for this week? Are there more we should read this week? Chapter 1, yes. The lecture that I have prepared with these slides, yes. And also some other links I will be sending out, just as additional sources. By the way, chapter 2 is about security culture. We didn't have time for discussing about the topic today. And since the next lecture is week 42, threats and so, I think, so you will have the lecture as a recording from before. As a huge advantage for the Norwegians, it's in Norsk. But anyway, we will talk about that. I guess, yeah, we can easily... Yeah, it won't be a part maybe of the final exam for sure, since the material and the whole video is in Norwegian, okay? Yes, I think I answered this question. What does dissemination mean? Did I use the word dissemination? Sorry? Oh yeah, dissemination is about spreading news or information. That's as easy as it is. Yes. it might have been a spread of the attack in a sense, but I'm not sure. But anyway, yeah, it's like spreading the effect of having something spread around. Will the lectures be streamed? The lecture is being streamed and it will be streamed, but I hope most of you should join here anyway. This is, yeah. Answered. Yes. Any more questions? There's one. Casting a fishing net. Okay. This is the answer to the previous question. Nice. We are communicating. Thank you.